So, guys, who's going to compare this week's All About Symbian Insight?
Well, I nominate Steve.
I second that option.
Okay, right. I'm fully prepared, fully up for it. Insight 115, it is Friday, the 23rd of April, 2010. You'll probably be hearing this on the following Monday. We're going to comment on the news of the week and give you some hopefully insightful analysis. Starting with some Nokia device launches. The C5 and X5, both aimed at the Chinese market. Here we are. TD-SCDMA C501. These acronyms just get worse and worse. An affordable and classically styled candy bar smartphone. This is the C5 S60 3rd Edition Feature Pack 2. Looks fairly unremarkable. 5-megapixel camera. Stainless steel build looks nice, though. And there's loads and loads of support for different services they're shipping. Rafe will give you the details in a moment. Just want to cover the X5 as well. Also TD-SCDMA, a mid-range music-focused handset. Also S63rd Edition Feature Pack 2. This time with dedicated music key, allowing one-touch access to CMCC music, whatever that is, and ships again with a range of services, including the MM Ovi Store. So, Rafe, what's really interesting about these two devices for you? What do people need to know?
Well, first, for those that don't know the TD-SCDMA stuff, that's the Chinese variant of 3G. This is being used by China Mobile, which is the biggest operator in China, about 700 million subscribers. And they're rolling out their 3G services using this. It's part of the sort of Chinese government strategy of wanting to use homegrown technology to be less reliant on stuff from overseas, presumably with trade balance and all sorts of other reasons. But it's very similar in the way it works, but it isn't cross-compatible. So it is a sort of unique to China thing. And what people need to know about these two handsets, really, is it's Nokia pushing its Symbian handsets into the mid-tier again, but this time it's on TD-SCDMA. They're the third and fourth handsets for the Chinese market like this that Nokia have done. They started with the 6788, then recently announced the 6788i. And what they're really doing here is these are the ones that are going to sell in bigger numbers, because these are, as you said, mid-tier handsets. And particularly in a market like China, that's going to be very important. The other thing to note, really, is it's the combination of China Mobile services. You mentioned CMCC Music, that's China Mobile Music Service, and then MM Ovi Store, which is the joint collaboration, again, recently announced between China Mobile. Its mobile market is the MM, and Ovi Store is the Nokia bit, obviously. And that's a way to get applications and other content, be it games, ringtones, themes, onto the phone very easily. There's also Fetian IM and 189. I think it is the 139 Mail, which again are homegrown China services. And it's a good example of the way that Nokia is combining with a local operator in, you know, what is effectively the world's biggest market to create an offering that is part operator driven, but partly also Nokia's own services. And I think that's particularly interesting as a, you know, it's contrast perhaps with some of the other smartphone platforms, which are very much, we do things our way and that's the way you're going to get it. We've seen that with Windows Mobile, Windows Phone 7, also, of course, with the iPhone. And Google, to an extent, does that with Google with strings, and they're now having issues in the Chinese market because of the recent moves with China. It doesn't mean Android isn't going to be in that market at all, but certainly, strategically, Nokia's made some very astute moves here and does seem to be sort of the leading smartphone platform in China. And they've already done quite well. In the last quarter, for example, they grew their sales by 30% off the back of the Chinese New Year. And I suspect going forward this year, we're going to see fairly significant sales now that they have a combination of these China-specific 3G handsets at different price points. And I'm sure there's more to come as well. So it may not be of interest to people in the Western world, but of course, for developers, this is potentially a very big market if you can get your content onto there, your applications, your games. And it also it gives extra stability in some way to Symbian in China, because it's not reliant on using handsets from outside, the non-3G ones or the Chinese variants of existing handsets. These are specifically for the Chinese market. And unsurprisingly, stuff that's done specifically for the local market with specific local services is always going to do better than sort of a generic version from a world variant.
I like the look of these. I mean, I know a lot of people are going to say these look quite plain, staid. You know, I think one of the comments was that these were neutral designs. But, you know, they have the screen, they have a cursor, they have the buttons at the bottom. yes, it's in that candy bar format, but there's a bit of shaping, there's a bit of spoil, especially on the X5. And they look like phones. They're not whiz-bang stuff with bits hanging out of them. They're phones. These are workhorse units. And I think that they're going to be doing very, very well inside. Well, I think they do very well around the world if you had the right frequency circuits inside them, so you could use, you know, CDMA or regular 3G on these ones. I also love the fact that... Rafe?
I was going to say, I think you're right there. And of course, it's worth noting that we specifically said it's the C501 in China. The C500 is the C5 that Nokia's already announced, which again is that fairly plain-looking traditional phone-style handset with the T9 keyboard. So you're right. I think those handsets, you know, they're very mid-tier and they're quite boring in a way, but they are going to be big sellers because they sort of do the basics, and the pricing is also going to be there to match that as well. So I think it's
and
a good
it's also.
Point.
It's also great that the copyright on this design actually ran out 40 years ago, so that's going to keep the cost down as well. I mean, these are certainly, you know, again, it's another Nokia device that has been built on the basis of cost, like something like the 5230 that we have in the Western world. Again, these are coming in as affordable handsets. Yes, it's third edition feature pack 2, and it does go back a little bit, but, you know, you're still talking of, they've got 256 meg of memory on board there. Yay, that might actually work. Microwave SD card, slightly smaller battery, 950 milliamp hours. But you couple all of that, and again, we're bringing in strands that we've been talking about for some time on the Insight podcasts. When you look at the Ovi store offerings, when you look at the music store, you know, Chinese consumers are used to just getting music off the internet from whatever sources, because we're going to have the MMOV store in here, so they'll still be getting their music from the internet, but it'll be going direct into their handset, and there will be some money going back to the creators, the composers and the writers and the performers of all that music. These are smart moves, and I know people are going to go, oh, Nokia's just seeding the high market. Nokia's given up. Do they really think that their company can survive on all these phones being sold in China? Yeah. I hope believe it, they can survive on these for a long, long time. And you also have to remember, they've got this much innovation down at the low end. We've not seen the innovation at the high end yet. And, you know, they haven't seeded it. They've just not announced it yet. In the same way that they took 2 or 3 years to get all the software and services running, some of that was done in plain sight. Some of that was done in hiding. So what happens when we actually see what the top-level stuff is? This is an exciting time. This is very much a Sun Tzu, you know, when your enemy is attacking, don't do anything. And when your enemy stops, that's when you go in.
I wanted to slinkly link here into the next story, actually, because people have described this current phase that we're in as using a motoring analogy as either a pit stop or a gear change. In this lull between, we've had the N97 Mini and sort of the last of the traditional S65th edition handsets from Nokia. Then we had a few budget releases, but nothing really, really exciting now for quite a long time. But we know that just around the corner, I mean, literally days or even weeks away, we've got some of the first Symbian 3 handsets from Nokia about to be announced. There will be other Symbian 3 devices announced from the likes of Sony Ericsson later on in the year, but we're in this lull, so it's kind of exciting. We're looking at the Nokia's quarter one 2010 results, which also came out a couple of days ago, and Ray phrased the headline, smartphone growth with cautious outlook. It's a lull report, not an awful lot happening, but just steady growth, perhaps not as exciting, as riveting as Apple's quarter one results. The iPhone is doing surprisingly well, again because of the Chinese holiday period, apparently, according to Tommy Ahonen. Just to give you some of the headline figures, Nokia's quarter one 2010 smartphone market share worldwide was actually up 1% to 41%. And again, it's a figure that will confound the critics. Also up 3% year on year. So last year it was 38%, this year 41%. So that's pretty good. Converged device sales, that's smartphone sales, are 21.5 million in the quarter. I think the iPhone sales worldwide were somewhere around 8 million for quarter one. So we're looking at about 2.5 times the sales of the iPhones. And if you still add up our RIMs, BlackBerrys, Apple's iPhones and HTC's phones all together, they only just about match Nokia's smartphone sales worldwide. So Nokia's still got a pretty healthy lead, and somehow, semi-miraculously, they're managing to maintain it with their strategy of aiming at the lower mid-tier. I'm hoping very much that when the exciting Symbian 3 handsets actually get launched and then are available perhaps in sort of July, early August time, I think that Nokia will really pick up speed, and then we really, following on from this pit stop and this gear change metaphor, we'll start to see some real acceleration. Does that ring true, Rafe?
I think that does ring true. I mean, the assumption has been from a lot of people that Nokia aren't releasing the high-end handsets and that they've somehow seeded the market. And really, we've said on the Insight many times that that isn't really the case. And I think evidence of this came quite strongly in the Q1 results. And we'll get on to Symbian 3, which they talked about in a minute. But to underline what you're saying, absolutely this quarter or the last quarter was about growth through the mid and the low tier smartphone handsets. And that's things particularly like the 5230. And that's actually did contribute to Nokia's average selling price coming down. And I think particularly notable, I think the average selling price for smartphones was down, you know, something like 30%. I can't remember the exact figures. It was down to around, I think, 115 euros from 153. So, and people have seized on that rightly. But it's almost a case of Nokia's putting this mid-tier and low-end strategy in place. And this is actually a new area which has done very well. And by some estimates, Gartner, I think, is saying that Nokia own about 70% of this market, which is really quite remarkable. It's clearly weaker at the higher end, but it's you know, counting on handsets which are effectively a year old on a platform which is waiting for an update. And that was the other big thing that came out of these results, was really the cautious outlook. And that was partly based on the margins that Nokia was talking about for its devices going forward. They were talking about 9 to 12% rather than sort of 12% plus. And that caused the share price to fall quite significantly. Their profits were also slightly below expectations. And so a lot of the reporting around this has been that Nokia have had a bad set of results. I think if you look at smartphone growth in particular, that's pretty encouraging. And then the other sort of big story around this was the Symbian 3 delay. Calling it a delay is, I think, open to debate the terminology here, because it's a case of Nokia were never terribly exact about when they would be releasing their first Symbian 3 handsets, and it's due count when they're announced, when they're launched, and etc., etc. And Symbian have always said that look towards mid-year 2010 for the first ones on the market, and Nokia said that they are actually slightly behind, or they're delayed in their internal timeline for the first Symbian 3 handset. And so that's been widely picked up. I think, to be fair, the reality is there is a delay of a few weeks. I'd say maybe 6 weeks. You know, we're expecting maybe June. It's going to happen July, August time. And that does have a significant effect on Nokia's financial results, which is why I said it's sort of a cautious outlook and why they did cut the guidance, for example, on margins in devices and services. But the other thing here is Nokia were really talking up Symbian 3. They were very confident that it was going to produce good results. And we can't actually talk about it yet because we haven't seen the first handset. But they were saying things like, you know, they have key performance indicators whereby they look at whether an operator is going to range a handset. And that means, is an operator going to take a handset and put it on their network? And for all the talk about SIM-free sales and things like that, the vast majority of phones are still sold through operators. And so that kind of indicator is extremely important, as Nokia said. And they said we're seeing extremely positive results there, suggesting that the Symbian 3 handsets are going to be well received by operators and sell well in the market. You know, you could say this is Nokia just talking a good game. And you just have to, you know, take them at their word in one sense. But Nokia do have a reasonable track record of being honest, and clearly there's legal implications and compliance legislation when they're talking about financial results. And I thought the other thing that caught my attention was OPK said, you know, we're not going to release this Symbian 3 handset until the quality is what the consumers expect it to be. And clearly this is a follow-up to what happened with the N97. I think it's the right decision to make. You know, he said, yes, it's painful to have this delay, but ultimately it's the right thing to do. And I think, honestly, it's pretty Nokia deserve congratulations for being upfront and honest about this. Now, you could, of course, debate whether this is market spin or whatever. But no, I think it is an honest assessment. You know, they don't want to have a delay, but better to make sure they actually get the handset absolutely right the first time. And of course, because it's, you know, a platform advantage using something like Symbian, yes, the first handset might be delayed, but subsequent ones will be delayed less and less because, of course, they'll have had the experience with the first one.
Yeah, and they make...
And just
it makes me laugh. The way the certainly some American commentators have been saying, "Oh, it's absolutely ridiculous how long it's been taking for Symbian to get their first major release, Symbian 3, out," and completely ignoring the fact there are 40 million lines of code that are one of the most complex operating systems on the planet, certainly the most complex mobile operating system with the most functionality, has been taken from fully proprietary to fully open source. That is going to take time, and every single last module, every single line of code that's proprietary has to be tracked down, the author found, and permissions given, and things signed in triplicate. There is a huge amount of legwork having to go on here, and the fact they've only taken, is it a year and a half now, roughly?
It's not even a year and a half. I mean, really, the Symbian Foundation got going on the 1st of April. Now, clearly, it had been in development before this, but I do think it's disingenuous to say that it's taking a long time to do a Symbian release, especially when the existing handsets out there are still, you know, the best-selling in the market. They may not have the best consumer experience according to various surveys, but there's a difference between what, you know, the high-end tech press things and commercial success. And I think, yes, Nokia would be the first to say Symbian 3 would have been better if it was 6 months earlier, but ultimately it's not going to make a big deal of difference. And when they're being so confident about the release and saying, you know, it's going to allow us to really catch up in the high-end, and effectively they've not done high-end releases because they've been waiting for Symbian 3, it sort of reaffirms their strategy. And clearly a lot's now riding on Symbian 3, and it'll be very interesting to see the first handsets. And it's not something we can judge immediately on the first handset. You're going to have to wait, you know, and see how they do compare, you know, in 6 months, a year's time, because they also talk about how Symbian 4 is in 2011. But they think that most of the competitive catch-up will happen with Symbian 3. And, you know, OPK said initially most of the handsets are going to be high-end, then it will be pushed, you know, lower down as time goes by. So we're going to go into another transition period, if you like, where you're going to have Symbian 3 at the high end, Symbian 1 in kind of some of the lower end mid-tier handsets, and you'll still have S63rd edition or Symbian OS 9.3 in the sort of the non-touch devices. But I think what Nokia are going to do, sometime this quarter, they said they will be announcing their first Symbian 3 handset, and that's going to bring Nokia back in as a player very effectively at the high end. They've also got the MeeGo handset coming in later in the year, which is still on track apparently for, I think it's Q4 2010. So they'll be doing what they refer to as even higher end, I think it was in the earnings call. And they're going to have several Symbian 3 handsets this year. So it'll be very interesting to see the position in 6 months' time. You know, people have been talking about this lack of competitive spirit at the high end. Now, if you ask me, I think there's still going to be a lot of competition because you're going to have new Android handsets. Presumably the fourth generation of the iPhone is going to come out as well. But I think with the Symbian 3, particularly because we'll be getting the upgrade on the underlying hardware, and a lot of the Ovi services are coming together very nicely indeed, we're going to see something that's extremely competitive. And if you then start pulling in things like Ovi Store and Qt, you actually have quite a compelling developer offering. And so, as we've been saying for a long time on this insight, there's a lot of factors coming together. And so it's interesting to see, it's quite short-termist to start writing off Nokia as just being about the low-end smartphones. I mean, it's two issues that I have. People say the low-end doesn't matter when actually it's, you know, the volume market, and arguably for services that's most important. And secondly, people are saying Nokia's already lost in the high-end. Well, don't write them off because clearly there's stuff on the way. And to have such a confident tone in their Q1 results and in the earnings call, Nokia clearly feel that they're going to make a big comeback with Symbian 3. I think probably the reality will be somewhere in between the two, but I think it will make a significant difference, you know, because it's going to be things like capacitive, there's going to be one-touch paradigm, as in, you know, direct UI interaction. There will still be some hangovers from the older version of Symbian, and there will still be some issues, but when you couple that together with Nokia's distribution power, I think it's going to be a very, very serious play, and it'll be interesting to see what happens in the second half of this year. You know, many have referred to 2010 as a bloodbath for smartphones, and Palm's already looking like being one of the first casualties. And clearly there's a lot of competitors from Android, and iPhone is about to announce their new one. But I think it's going to be very much a three-way race, you know, later in the year. And don't write off BlackBerry either. They just announced the most recent version of their OS 4 and their new flip phone. So there's a lot coming, and I think people are going to be probably mildly surprised by Nokia's comeback for those that have already written it off. For those who have been listening to the Insider course, they already know that it's on the way. And I certainly look forward to writing about the new handsets and looking at them in more detail, and we'll, of course, be discussing them on the Insights as well.
Yeah, you were right there when you talked about the underlying hardware having a big upgrade. I think 2010 is the year that Nokia finally listens to Steve, as I put it. all the things I've been telling them they've been getting wrong by missing out, they're finally putting back. So yes, capacitive touchscreen will come in. That is the fashion these days, and the capacitive is probably better for most use cases for most users, I will admit.
It's an interesting one, because I think capacitive makes sense in some places, but not all the time. You need to have a mix of the two. But what I think it is fair to say is the X6, which does have the capacitive screen, has clearly been quite well received. So having both, depending on the situation in the mid-tier,
yeah,
the cost means you go resistive maybe. At the high end, you maybe have a combination of the two. But yes, you're right. It's going to answer that market kind of demand for a capacitive high-end touchscreen from Nokia.
There'll also be the 256 megabytes of RAM, or even more. The new Sony Ericsson handsets have got that, and it makes a big, big difference in terms of performance. And we've all been saying week after week that these Nokia smartphones, certainly for power users, haven't got enough RAM. So I'm sure they'll fix that. Hardware graphics acceleration we know is coming back in for Symbian 3 and Symbian 4. That will make a big difference as well. So yeah, this is the year that Nokia listens to Steve. Let it be officially recorded. You had some comments on the results as well.
I did, yes. I'm going to say this twice because it's actually incredibly important. 831 million euros profit. So for all the doomsayers, for all the Nokia is dead, for all it's dying, for it's a terrible company, for they're not living, their repetition. 831 million euros profit. Now, that, of course, is in just one section. That's the devices and services section. But hold on, they're not going to work in the low tier and the mid tier? Yeah, they are, bucket loads. That low and mid tier provides something that very few other mobile companies have. That is a safety net. Palm didn't have a safety net. Palm had one mid to high end handset. They rolled the dice and they failed. What did they have to fall back on? Nothing. Oh, they tried to make the Pixie, and then that kind of died as well. The simple fact that Nokia are shifting so many units, making so much money, allows them time to delay a leading handset by 6 to 8 weeks or everything. And that is incredibly important. It doesn't kill any marketing plans. It doesn't have elevation partners or any of the VC partners breathing down their neck going, you have to get this phone out now. They can, if they want to, take time and get it right. That is incredibly important. Secondly, it's those numbers on sort of like more people are buying smartphones. Well, that's true, but less people are buying Series 40. They're switching to Series 60 now. So I think that's probably going to be an interesting one for the statisticians to rip apart. What is clear, of course, is that people are still buying Nokia handsets, and more Nokia handsets have more and more converged features. And more of those features are built on things like Ovi Store, Ovi Maps, and all those other softwares and stuff. And I know Rafe will probably want to pick up on just how important a cornerstone that is across low, mid, and high tier devices. The pit stop routine is incredible. Fights. You cannot win the race at a pit stop. You can lose it, but you cannot win. What it allows you to do is slightly regroup and go off in the exactly correct direction that you want to go do for the rest of the year. And finally, Nokia making all this profit and all these returns on handsets which have a very low profit margin in terms of raw cash value. You know, they're selling at $100 to $150. They're only making about maybe 8 or 9 euros per handset profit when they come back again. Yeah, when they get back to the high-end phone, then they will have the ability to go to about 15%. Now, 15% of 400 is far, far, far more than 6% on a $100 device. There's this massive difference. So they may actually see a big jump in their profits and their income, and certainly on their grosses, when we come around to this time next year, purely by virtue of that they will have another high-end device coming in here. What we're seeing in this result is Nokia's baseline. This is the sort of numbers that Nokia won't go below, because this is their core market that will always happen. And that is equivalent to companies like Apple and companies like Microsoft and their mobile divisions going at full power. Are Nokia going to put stuff on top of this? And we think they're dead? let's try again.
There we go, Ewan. And you're right, the portfolio mix is going to change, and that will have an impact. I think we can expect to see Q2 maybe be a bit underperforming because of this delay. But as you say, Q3, Q4, and going into 2011, it'll be very interesting to see what happens. I think we're going to see more cost-cutting from all the big vendors. So I think perhaps the profits are still going to be quite thin, and I think that trend will continue. Before we move off these results, just a few other things that are worth mentioning that sort of got lost in everything else. Nokia Messaging now on 72 operators, 52 of which are active now. That's a pretty impressive success story for a manufacturer-generated service to get that popular on so many operators. And now with 3 million accounts created, I think that's an understated success story for Nokia. Also, the Ovi Maps with free navigation, that's been downloaded now 10 million times. Now, that's not shipping on handsets. That's actually 10 million people have downloaded it to an existing handset. That's presumably helped as Nokia's expanding the number of handsets that it runs on. But I think that's a great example of how Nokia can create a compelling service and actually push it out to already existing owners, which promises much for the future.
Ian, even if some of those 10 million people already had Ovi Maps version 2 or whatever, it wasn't a push update. It was if you want to update, you got to go and do something. I suspect 85% of those will have been existing users, but the fact is they're still reaching them.
Absolutely. No, it doesn't really matter whether they're existing users or not. Getting them to take that kind of action with a Nokia device is the big point here. And 10 million, we're talking a lot of downloads for just a single application. Admittedly, that is coming off a big install base, but even so, Nokia, who's moving towards applications and content and servicing, I think that's an encouraging figure. Just the last one we'll mention, then we've got a couple of other news items, I think. Ovi Store, the most popular devices now have 9,500 items of content. Still work to do there, but I think now you can get a Nokia device and there's quite a lot of content that you can add to it. And, not quite something for everyone, perhaps, but sort of getting that way, and that's certainly positive. Also, now that the average active user is downloading 8 bits of content per month, that rather rubbishes the idea that Nokia owners don't download content. Now they've got an easy-to-use channel, they are downloading content. Again, still room for improvement. Just the final one, they've just upped the daily Ovi Store downloads to 1.7 million, which again is increasing. And if you add that up over the 365 days of the year, you're starting to get, pretty close to some very, very big numbers. And I think and Nokia, if they aren't already, are well on the way to becoming the second biggest app store. And if the growth continues, I think, as I said earlier, well on the way to becoming the biggest app store, by the end of 2010 and into 2011.
Okay. Talking of big numbers, Offscreen Technologies, I read on a news story from you, Rafer, passed 25 million downloads just over their portfolio of games and applications, and I gather ebooks now as well. Level Touch, Bright Light Touch, and Labyrinth Light Touch each have been downloaded more than a million times, which is pretty impressive. Any comments there?
Tremendous success story from the Ovi Store here. 25 million downloads. Again, it's quite difficult to get your head around that numbers, but it is a lot. I think the point here is there aren't numbers being reported on the commercial success, and that's not really terribly surprising. That really applies to all app stores. But if you've got 25 million downloads from a single company, this is, there are commercial models you can apply to this, be it something that's pure commercial based, cross-sell on your freeware games, freemium upsell from light versions, or ad-supported. It is worth pointing out that the majority of Offscreen's content on the Ovi Store, they have about 100 items, are available for free. There are about 10 or so pay items, and so it'll be interesting if we can get in touch with them and talking about what the balance is there. But whatever way you look at it, 25 million means there's a lot of people actively downloading stuff from this company and getting it onto their things, and it does demonstrate that Ovi Store is working. I mean, 25 million is a number that you won't see many other companies being able to claim, of getting that number of downloads off a single app store. So, if you add that together with the other, proof points we've been having coming through, Nemo Solutions or Digital Chocolate or Shazam, it's pretty difficult to say now that Ovi Store isn't driving downloads. Work to do on the commercial side, and I still think there's more content that needs to be done. But developers, this is a distribution platform that is doing millions of downloads a day and is driving 25 million downloads for just one company, and that's in less than a year. So, get on board, because there are opportunities here. And I think this kind of case study is really just underlining what we've been saying for the last few months about OviStore.
I am going to sound a note of caution here, and it's slightly reverse of what I did a couple of weeks ago, but basically just to put a touch of realism in here. It is all well and good app stores promoting their success stories, which I believe they should, and it is all well and good seeing a couple of companies that have got huge, massive numbers, because that is what you want to see. What we need to know is things like averages, means, and medians. If there are, and let's just go slightly stupid here. Let's say there are 1,000 publishers in the OviStore, and 4 of them are getting more than 1 million downloads each, and the other 96 are getting 1 million between them. That's not a healthy app store. So at the moment, we have a curve, and we know where the curve starts. We don't know where the curve ends. We don't know the steep of it. You know, we don't know the first or second derivative on that curve to actually go back to some calculus. So you... The OviStore is improving. Agreed. The OviStore has the ability to drive millions of downloads. Agreed. Does the OviStore have the ability for lots of developers to make a month living wages to make this not just a stable ecosystem, but a thriving ecosystem? Answer unclear. Ask again later when we've got a little bit more data. Now, in Nokia's defense, you know, no app store releases those numbers. They all have to be re-engineered. And for that, you need a lot more samples. You need a lot more people out there. And yes, you are getting information out there. You are getting the stuff out there. So it does work. But let's not go letting off the party poppers too soon.
No, absolutely. You're right there, Ewan. I think what I would say is the very fact that you're able to ask that question about OviStore really demonstrates that it has passed stage one of the sort of success story, if you like. You know, and you're quite right, this is a problem that every application store is facing, and it's really one of discovery as much as anything else. You know, the distribution angle is pretty much sorted by app stores. You know, I'd say that there's room for improvements, and you look at things like in-app payment or subscriptions or demos, etc. But that's, as we know, is well on the way. But yes, discovery is still a problem in app stores. And I think this is where sort of OviStore's layer of the recommendation through your social graph, your social network, needs to come in, which we haven't really seen very much of. They talked about it when they first launched it. And it'll be, I think, the application store that manages to do that first will have a significant advantage. But what I would say is it does now appear that OviStore is in that game rather than not being anywhere at all. If we think back to the launch, which frankly was disastrous, it wasn't working, it was overwhelmed. I think it's clear that the OviStore has improved significantly more than anyone else in the last year. Perhaps that's because they had the worst base to, or the best base to grow from, because they were so poor to start with. But the parity now between the various app stores is much closer than it ever was up until this point in time.
I'm going to throw this out as an idea, not as a sort of serious thing, because I know, but there actually is an online store out there that has recommendations working, and it's called Amazon. So what would happen if Amazon was to get into the software game at a platform neutral level? They do it for books, they do it for toys and DVDs and media, and they already have the ability through digital MP3 downloads to provide an electronic store, an electronic storefront. I wonder if, yes, manufacturers, app stores, great idea, network stores, great ideas. We've kind of forgotten about the standalone app store, and the granddaddy of them all isn't doing anything. I wonder what would happen to the ecosystem if Amazon suddenly stood up and went, guess what, we're doing.
I think you're right there. I mean, the only thing I'd say is Amazon is really the best of the old style of e-commerce, and it is starting to do things internally with its own data. But I still think there's a long tail distribution problem, even on something like Amazon. Some books sell better than others, and what Amazon is very good at is recommending the sort of the big sellers, but getting the sort of absolute, the fine grain stuff, particularly I think on the local level, which is so important in mobile, is perhaps less good at. But certainly that's the way you need to head with those kind of algorithms. And you think about the algorithm challenge from Netflix, for example. You know, could Nokia do something like that for the OviStore recommendation engine in the future? You know, an area I think we'll come back to again and again.
I just have the image now of, why not build a recommendation for us? And if you do, we'll give you a prize of a recommendation engine, which is what they seem to do with all the software developer competitions.
Okay, let's move on with a couple of brief items before we finish the All About Symbian Insight. Nokia 5800 Express Music has had a game-changing update, in some people's words, from version 40 firmware to version 50. As people have said in the comments in our story, it has come a huge distance, this Nokia 5800, from low-end device with really rather wonky firmware to something which has got cutting-edge kinetic scrolling in the main application menu, up-to-date next-generation browser engine, next-generation the music player from the N97 now as well. Kinetic scrolling everywhere you look, latest version of Flash. The 5800 really has been brought right up to date. The only thing it's currently lacking is the N97 style widget home screen. And who's to say that version 60 firmware won't bring that as well? But just do grab that. Many people have been saying very nice things about the version 50 update for that. Nokia E72 has really had a big update too, to version 31 firmware from version 22. It's a 200 megabyte ROM image, this one. I caught from Rafe's screenshot, so it's a pretty weighty operating system. The main changes: you get internet radio at long last, advanced communication manager. I think that is that new, Rafe?
Yes, it's a third-party title which is now pre-shipping with the device, and they've nicely included it in the latest firmware, as is the case with Smart Connect, which is for doing group access points.
Yeah, you also get a new version of the browser, which includes the latest version of WebKit, and you get better support for Microsoft Silverlight, apparently. You do get all your data preserved, so it's no reason why you shouldn't update this. And the E72 was plagued with a number of minor bugettes, if I can call them that, certainly from my review device was. It's one of the first S60 third edition feature pack 2 devices, certainly in that form factor, and they keep incrementing the minor versions of the third edition feature pack. Are we up to 3.2.2.2.2 yet, right?
Something like that. But yes, this E72 firmware update has fixed a couple of bugs that I came across, notably the spacebar one, which was a little bit annoying, and certainly one of the biggest change logs I've seen in terms of bug updates. So I think this is, you know, cementing the E72's place as kind of Nokia's leading high-end QWERTY handset, and has been selling quite well as well.
Yeah. There's the E63, I remember, had an update in the last Insight we mentioned. That was a Feature Pack 1 device. We've got the E5 on the way. So Nokia really are carrying through their promised support for a portion of their range being dedicated to this candy bar QWERTY form factor. I suspect the E5 will start to take over from the E72 simply because of the huge price difference. But the E5, of course, isn't actually due here now until sometime in the summer. So there's a fair number of months still to go. There's also the X6. Which we mentioned earlier, that's also had a firmware update, but I gather it hasn't made it as far as Edinburgh, Ewan. Ewan is desolate.
I just want my music player to work as fast as the old one.
Oh, I've got some bad news for you then, Ewan, because Tim, our good friend Tim Salmon, has updated his X6, and apparently it doesn't fix any of the performance or RAM issues. It simply updates things like the main Maps engine, the ObviStore engine. So I think you might be waiting for version 21 firmware before they really start working on RAM. That's Ewan throwing his
Tearing up his
So yes, I think Ewan will be moving on to another handset unless he has any hair left. The X6 also does get the kinetic scrolling in the application menu, so I think that's, you know, again, Nokia sort of standardizing what that looks like. But again, no home screen widgets, but it does have a number of bug fixes in it. So all of those firmware updates, especially with all the handsets we've mentioned, they've all got the user data preservation, so they make it easy to upgrade the firmware without losing any of your data. And it used to be that I'd say don't update it unless you're having a significant bug problem or you really need one of the extra functions that's come in the new firmware. And these days I'd generally say update the firmware, because you'll get a more stable handset and you'll probably get some extra nice features, especially when you're getting things like OviMaps, which means if you pre-installed it, it's taking up valuable space on the C drive. With these new firmwares, of course, it'll end up in the ROM and you'll get a bit more space back on your C. Less critical on most of these devices that have the bigger C drive, but I'm always a believer in so keeping up to date. You know, you get the latest bug fix and everything as well. So it's just more efficient. And doing it over the air particularly, which some of these handsets have it now and most of them will get it later, makes things extremely efficient indeed. And despite having the odd problem with Nokia software update, getting some of these updates generally goes very smoothly. And I think the bad old days where it was quite easy to brick a phone, it seemed to have largely gone away. Even if you do have a problem halfway through, it seems to be able to recover fairly easily.
I have a question for you, Ray. If you mentioned reclaiming space taken up by Ovi Maps on the C drive, if someone has installed data version of Ovi Maps on their C drive and they're down to, I don't know, 10-15 megabytes free, and they then update the firmware, does the firmware update process, is that intelligent enough to remove the old application file and reclaim that space?
I'm not actually sure. I will have to check this out because it's a good question, but I've got a couple of handsets where it will be the case if I upgrade the firmware. I can check out one of the ones I've upgraded and see whether it's still sitting there on C. I suspect it probably is intelligent enough to get rid of it, because otherwise you'd get a clash between the installation on the ROM drive and on the C drive, but I will check that out.
Yeah, but my standard advice still exists. I know you get to keep your user data, but I still recommend taking a backup to memory card, doing the update, and if you've got any uncertainty whatsoever, just hard wipe the C drive and then restore the backup. That way, certainly restoring everything except applications. At worst, you've got to reinstall a few apps. At best, you get an absolutely trouble-free, optimized system with the maximum amount of free disk space. So there are, but you shouldn't have problems. As Rafe says, bricking them is relatively rare now. The biggest problem you'll have is probably with Windows itself and Ovi Suite and PC Suite updates, as you found, Rafe.
Yeah, no, that's right. I mean, if you follow the standard advice, you install all your applications onto the memory card and you have most of your data sitting there in terms of things like images and videos, and the C drive is just for the odd bit of data. So if you do as what Steve just suggested, sort of reset the phone, you can put your memory card back in. Most of your applications should reappear, and you can then restore the backup as well, and you get all the things like contacts, etc. back on it as well. So even if you do that method, you can generally get a updated firmware phone that's going in about an hour or so. But as you said, there are various options there. And in general, I think the advice would now be update your firmware when you can, because it makes sense to do so.
Yeah, which is one of the prime bits of advice of my new series, Getting Started with Device X on All About Symbian. And if you'll see these articles popping up over the next few weeks on the site. They're not intended for the power users listening to these Insight podcasts, don't worry. So apologies if they seem patronizing. They're intended for beginners, but if you do have any comments on any of them or if you can contribute, I am building in the tweaks from your comments into future articles, then hopefully that can help beginners and help people coming in off Google who are perhaps not quite so knowledgeable about S60 and Symbian. I think we're running out of time, guys, so unless there's anything else, I will say goodbye.
And I'll say goodbye as well. I mean, it's been an extended insight, but we have had new handsets and quarterly results to talk about, so I hope you've enjoyed listening.
Indeed, yes. And if you're stranded in the air somewhere and still stuck out there, then why not take the time to leave a comment with the podcast, which is you can find at www.allaboutsymbian.com, or you can leave a comment in iTunes, which has the advantage that neither Steve, Rafe, or myself can edit that comment. So anything you read there, absolutely 100% genuine. Thanks, Mum.
You can also feedback to us via Twitter and follow our goings on. Steve Litchfield, Rafe Blandford, and Ewan. And then you can also fire direct messages or perhaps give us feedback that way. But for now, it's goodbye from me as well. And we'll see you all next week.